People first organizations will win in the future of work.
Your only real asset is your people.
We all want purpose-driven work.
HR-led organization is the
future. Sorry, but leaders don't lead empty desks and empty shop floors.
Welcome to the People Strategy Leaders Show. I'm your host, Sri Chalapa, founder and president of Engagedly, and a serial entrepreneur in technology, films, and music. This is where we talk to people leaders, business strategists, and organizational savants about leading in the time of change. What is working, what is not working, and more importantly, what we should be thinking about. Stick around to the end of the show. We will reveal how you can be our next guest. And now, let's engage.
Hello and welcome to People Strategy Leaders Podcast with Sri Chalapa. I'm today here with Casey Sanders. For 6 years, Casey has been the director of Total Rewards at Christian Care Ministry, a nonprofit financial services organization with 730 employees headquartered in Melbourne, Florida. During that time, he has also served for a short time as interim head of HR, leading an HR team of 24 employees. Prior to Christian Care Ministry, Casey owned an HR and benefits consulting firm in Kansas City, Missouri area. For nearly 20 years, Casey has helped organizations align their people strategy to their organization's mission and vision. He's been married for 15 years with 2 children and spends his free time coaching youth sports and serving in his local church. Well, welcome to the show, Casey. It's a pleasure to have you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
And for a full disclosure, you know, Casey is also a client of Engagedly, so we'll obviously talk a little bit about how that has been implemented and seen value in the organization as well. But I really want to start off, first thing is you are a big core values culture person at heart. You know, in our discussions, you wanted to really emphasize on that and how you want to drive culture more intentionally rather than it happening inadvertently. So talk a little bit more about how you actually think about it and what steps did you take to implement a strong culture and your core values in your organization? And why is that important?
Sure. Yeah, it's a shared belief of across our HR leadership team, first and foremost, that culture is always developing and being created and changing. And you can let that happen inadvertently, or you can be very proactive and try to have some intentionality around which way it's being shaped. And so that shared belief really just kind of fosters into everything that we do. For me personally, I believe core values, you know, can become the heartbeat of an organization and how folks behave and interact with each other, treat each other either well or poorly based on how well those core values are being lived out. And so just kind of a fundamental building block to everything that we do, from managing performance to recognizing and rewarding team members, those areas that HR influences, especially from a talent acquisition and maintaining talent standpoint.
Yeah. So one thing, you know, I sometimes see a struggle is that HR wants to implement and drive better culture, but they're not necessarily being supported by the management because management wants to do their thing. Even though they say they want to do this, behaviors usually don't reflect that. Obviously, you're being successful. So what is the right recipe there to make that successful? And how can HR have a little bit more of the driver's seat to make this happen?
Right. Well, you know, I think at the heart of the issue is really buy-in. It isn't something that just happens overnight. We're all real, you know, pretty imperfect people, and we're going to probably get it wrong at times. But, you know, buy-in comes from, you know, the senior most leadership of the organization, and then being intentional over longer periods of time. And, you know, that's where the influence of culture happens. You can't create it yourself. You're just realizing that HR can't make a culture. And we've probably been parts of organizations where maybe the CEO stood on a platform and rolled out core values. It was a grand event, and then it was just never spoken of again. And then culture just creates itself where we have these core values, but no one's really living them out or talking about them or trying to shape the culture that towards those things. And so really, once core values are laid out, and for our organization, how that has been successful is it becomes now embedded in every aspect of our working environment. So core values are introduced to an organization, but then how are they reinforced? And that's, you know, is it reinforced in performance management? Is it reinforced in rewards and recognition? Is it in the hiring process of what we're looking for in qualified candidates? That's how you begin to then just become a little bit more intentional with your efforts. And so we have a few things that hopefully we can share that might be helpful to organizations that are trying to influence it more and not letting it be kind of some taglines on a shelf.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, I see culture usually being posters put on a wall, but not lived. And then there's really nobody enforcing that culture, because you kind of have to drive and put energy into it. Otherwise you have entropy, you know, like if any organism, organization has entropy, if you don't actively put energy into getting into a state you want it to be in. So what have you done specifically? Maybe we can start at the top, you know, talk with recruiting first, right? Because that's where you really start introducing the culture and the values. So can we start at the top and then work down over the entire employee lifecycle on how that really gets influenced?
Sure. And yeah, and from the director of total rewards seat, I don't work in the talent acquisition day in and day out, but as part of the HR leadership team, you know, one of the things we talk about regularly is how do we help hiring managers understand, you know, the value of behavioral based interviews, and then planning those interview guides around what are we looking for, what values are we looking for, and then how do we you know, explore that with candidates to make sure that they've demonstrated the types of behaviors that would align to our values. And when they don't, needs to be equally as important as the tangible things we can see on the resume, you know, their skills and abilities.
Right.
And then, you know, as we move on to our performance management, you know, goals are extremely important. So setting goals that align to the organization's goals, but equally important to our performance annual review cycle that we do with our employees is the behaviors. And all of our behavioral-based competencies that one might have in a performance review are all directly linked to our core values. And so when you're, you know, looking for or giving feedback on how someone is doing in leadership, for example, you know, our core values, you know, a couple of them would be executing with unity or having, you know, executing with stewardship, you know, good stewardship as a nonprofit organization. That's very important to us stewarding our members' resources well. So it's really more than just, you know, this random set of competencies. It is, we are actually giving you feedback on, are you living out our core values in the way that you achieve those goals? And so it becomes more so than just a checkbox item to do. It's the why behind what we do and how we do it. And that helps foster the culture further when we're actively, you know, having them focus on those behaviors that we would say we value as an organization. And as we get into the compensation and the rewards of employees, that part of their life cycle is, it's with our rewards and recognition program. This is one of the things we're really proud of as an organization, is our leaders are engaged. You know, over 80% of our leaders every single month are catching our core values being lived out and giving a tangible reward through, we call them core value badges, so that they can foster an environment where employees not only feel celebrated when they are living out our core values, but then encouraging and fostering an environment where more people want to live those core values out to be recognized across the organization as well.
Right. So that's done through the Engagely recognition platform. And how do you make sure that everybody is doing that? I mean, because some managers get lazy, or they don't feel like, oh, I don't want to keep praising this person because then that person might become complacent, or some managers just simply don't care, right? So how do you make sure that it is happening consistently? Because otherwise what will happen is, and I've seen this happen, where one team is getting all the recognition And one team is getting all demotivated because their manager or their leadership is not giving them any recognition. They feel like nobody really pays attention to their work because they're not, maybe they're not doing as many, you know, cross-functional projects because they're kind of sitting in one corner of the office and doing something that nobody really sees. So what have you seen or done or that's more effective to make sure it is done in a more even-handed way and more effectively?
Right. Yeah, that's, I mean, we're not immune to the challenges that other organizations face. So, you know, we, how we keep intentional about making this a culture influencing impact as opposed to just another item on a leader's checklist of things to do is we talk about this at least quarterly in our regular leadership meetings across our senior leadership of an organization. We actually measure what percentage of leaders are giving that type of recognition by department so they can, we can kind of see how it's being distributed across the organization. But, you know, for leaders, you know, we on the HR side, we recognized early on that we needed tools and resources to make it not only efficient for them to be able to do that, but then it was also effective in changing behavior. And so for that's where Engagely really has come alongside us to help us make that an efficient process. So it's fairly simple for leaders to do that. But I would say the accountability comes when we share that in the leadership meeting and we talk about the importance of having influence on the culture of the organization. Leaders kind of seeing how they're doing in comparison, it makes it a way to then share that with their frontline leaders that they manage and lead to reinforce the behavior of those frontline leadership to be doing this on a regular basis. And so those helpful reminders and then providing them tools and resources to make it easy. We provide quite a few examples of what does it look like to actually live out a core value so that it becomes familiar when they see it, when leaders see it, and they can say, oh yeah, that is living out our core value. I need to recognize it.
So do you, I guess in the performance management process, obviously you are presenting that in the quarterly, that which managers are doing it and how many of them are doing it and all that. Do you actually use that as a way to even evaluate managers that are they doing this or not? Or is that more of a soft push?
Yeah. So yeah, it's not actually a formal part of their review other than incorporating it in the behavioral based competencies, those leadership, for example, and executing with unity, for example. These are of the initiatives the organization has, is the leader demonstrating alignment and agreement and support and their commitment to the things. That's part of the behavioral based piece of the performance review, but they don't have a specific goal that is assigned to them as a leader. So it's a little bit more of a softer push, but again, I think the things you measure and the things that you talk about regularly, those are the things that are going to get some intention as opposed to just happen willingly or inadvertently.
Yeah. So one other thing I wanted to touch upon, which, you know, when we were doing our, you know, discussion about how you're using the product and all of that, one thing that really stood out for me, and I look at a lot of clients and how they're using it, is you have almost 100%, if not 100% compliance, if you will, or completion rate on your performance reviews, pretty much on time. I found that very exciting, first of all, to see that. But I also was somewhat astonished because it's not something that happens in a lot of organizations. And we ourselves don't necessarily always get 100% on time. How did you accomplish that? That's a big one, you know, for a lot of HR leaders to try to get some of these processes done in time.
Yeah, there's quite a bit to unpack, but I would say there's really two things that probably have the biggest influence on that. We've probably a little backstory that would be helpful because your audience can probably relate to our organization in 2014, we started going through rapid growth. And we were in one location prior to 2014 and all on-site employees, and we were handling reviews on paper. And, you know, it became as we started going through rapid growth, expanded to two physical locations across the United States and then over 20 states we have remote employees in, we needed to reimagine the process. And in that, the two things that really have gotten us to where now for a few years in a row we've been at that 100% completion rate is the executive and board buy-in to the importance of an annual, at least an annual wrap-up and documentation of kind of those conversations about performance and behaviors that have happened throughout the year. And so we have this ingrained expectation of our organization that our board of directors will expect our senior leadership to give a self-review and have themselves reviewed by their leader. And they follow up, the board would follow up to make sure those are complete every single year. And then so we see that the behavior of completing a review and giving good feedback from the executive team drives down through the organization that expectation that we will put intention and the time needed to give a good review and feedback, and we apply these ratings, to these scores. And so, as the board has the accountability to the executive team, and then they model the behavior for the organization, it gets continued modeled all the way through the entire organization. So that's probably been, one of the fundamental things that has probably the largest impact. But I would say the other big thing that has helped us achieve that is we almost treat our annual review cycle as a change management process, because we don't go in assuming that, the natural feeling about annual reviews is oh, annual review
Right.
again, And so we go into the process just assuming that people are going to have to navigate the feelings and emotions also that come along with the reviews. So we find out who the influences are going to be. We communicate early and often the process, what's expected. We equip leaders with tools and resources to make the process as simple as possible. And but then also remind them of how to do it well. And so, with when we talk about effective communication in that process, it's also a two-way street. So we're not just, giving them the information and the communication flows one way. It's also receiving what are the challenges and opportunities of this of an annual review process that you're running into as a leader. How do we better equip and resource you with, that could be anything from a training guide to just role playing with them. We just give them the resources to make that process as easy as possible. And then even do some hand holding when it's really needed.
Yeah, well, that's excellent. You treating it as a change management process, make sure that you're putting enough emphasis in prepping people for that and not just launching it and then chasing them down. It's a little bit more proactive, anticipatory rather than reactive. That's great. I've never thought of that, and that's actually a really good takeaway as well. So as you're looking forward, what are some of the new initiatives that you're looking for to drive better culture and, overall the value, if you will, in the organization? Or are there things that you're looking at that you want to evolve the organization into?
Well, I would say, what's becoming in focus a little bit more is the area of analytics, data. How do we make, informed, wise decisions as leaders in the organization based on our experiences that we have and know? There, that'll be, one of the areas that we are growing in and developing in. But then how do we also then keep that aligned to our core values and it doesn't become just another thing to look at and do as a leader? We also are in the midst of probably what many organizations are faced with is we're returning people back to the office after the COVID years, and that will have a large impact on culture. And how do you do that in the best possible way? I don't know that any organization has the perfect recipe for what's the mix of hybrid and on-site and remote work when you have physical office locations. How do we Continue to keep that two-way communication going, really listening to people, but at the same time, you know, influencing the culture in the way that we feel like it needs to be as an organization for to set us up for the long-term success we need.
That's great. Yeah. So this is exciting, especially as a nonprofit. You know, your mission is slightly different than the for-profit, but driving people and culture is still equally important, if not more important in nonprofit, because it's not a, you know, profit is not a driver for driving culture. So it is definitely a lot of empathy and stewardship, like you mentioned. Great. Well, I really enjoyed our conversation. Is there anything you want to add that we may have missed in your approach that might be a good takeaway for our listeners?
I would just say, you know, just maybe it's a plug for Engagedly too, but, you know, I think just as much as your intentionality about, you know, driving culture, you know, really equipping leaders with efficient and effective tools and resources, you know, goes a long way into helping you actually implement change or drive cultures in a certain way. You can, if you're intentional about really complex and cumbersome activities, even the best organizations will struggle when it's hard to administer something new that you're trying to roll out. So, you know, I just would say, you know, invest in tools that make it really easy for leaders to participate and buy in and gain traction in things that will influence the culture, like performance management or rewards and recognition.
Great. Well, Casey, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for being on my show.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
Sri Chalapa here. Thank you so much for listening to the People Strategy Leaders Podcast. If you are a successful leader or a people strategist who would like to be on this program, please visit engagedly.com/People Strategy Leaders Podcast. If you got something out of this interview, would you share this episode on social media? If you know someone that would be a great guest, tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag People Strategy Leaders. I love seeing your posts and guest suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss any episodes, go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show and mean a lot to me and my team. Want to know more? Follow me on LinkedIn and Twitter at Sri Chalapa. Thanks for listening. We will see you next time. And thank you to Patrick Ramsey, sound engineer at Kalinga Production Studios, for recording and mixing this show.